On this episode of Hardwood Handicappers, we're hitting the big news that Dusty May, Michigan's championship-winning head coach, is heading to the Dallas Mavericks. We're also talking through the NBA draft with Matt McCall, who's formerly a head coach at both Chattanooga and UMass. And we're also diving into some early 2026-2027 value bets to win the most valuable player awards.
Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're going to hit a lot on this show. I want to start with the news of the day. Dusty May, hired by the Dallas Mavericks. This is something that there were some rumblings about for months. I mean, Masai Ujiri took over as the lead decision maker for this Dallas organization, made some big changes, hired Mike Schmitz, you know, a former draft guy, formerly in the Portland Trailblazers front office. A lot of different moving parts here. But the rumors were that the Mavericks were looking to hire one of college basketball's younger elite coaches. And they were talking about Dusty May. They were talking about John Shire. And it does sound like Shire was maybe offered this job and decided to stay in Durham. I mean, passing up that Duke gig and being Mike Krzyzewski's, you know, successor, that is something that means a lot to players that actually played in Duke. So it's completely understandable that Shire wanted to stay in college. Plus, he has never won a national title as a coach, wants to go and kind of finish his story there. But Dusty May, winner of last year's national championship, winner of the NCAA tournament with Michigan, he kind of completed his job at Michigan. He turned them in to a national championship winning team. And that makes more sense that he was more willing to maybe try out a new challenge. But this is, in my opinion, a home run of a hire. I mean, this guy is just a proven winner, has done it at multiple different spots. I mean, Florida Atlantic is a very tough job. You're competing with all the other Florida schools for talent. You're never going to be able to get the top recruits in state, and just kind of bringing a program like that to national prominence is insane. And that's exactly what Dusty May was able to do there. He went 17-16 in his first year with FAU. By year five, 35-4, and obviously led that team to the Final Four, where they looked every bit as good as the teams they ran up against. It looked like they could have absolutely won that tournament that year. And coached one more year at FAU, ended up getting the Michigan job, and just like he did at FAU, quickly turned things around. I mean, his year one in Michigan, 27-10, made the Sweet 16. They probably would have been happy with more results like that. Year two, complete leap to 37-3, 19-1 in Big Ten play. And as I said, national champions. And that was a roster that was absolutely loaded with talent. Like, we're going to talk about the draft here in a second, but you're talking about having Yaxel Endeborg, Ade Mara, Morez Johnson Jr. I mean, three players that are in the lottery mix in the 2026 NBA draft, all coached by Dusty May. And he definitely got a lot out of every other player on the roster. So this is a really, really proven winner, as I said before, but also someone that has proven that he could develop talent. He has great relationships with his players and by all accounts seems like a great guy to work with. So the thought of him kind of making this leap and going from college basketball to the NBA and kind of wondering whether or not it'll work, it should work. This is a guy that really understands how to connect with players, and it seems like he is very open to kind of adjusting his strategies based on what's happening. And I think that this is a guy that has proven now throughout his career that he understands both ends of the floor, because I think he kind of went to Michigan with, you know, a reputation as being an offensive mastermind. And we saw that with Michigan. We saw it with FAU. This is a guy that really allows his players to go out and play their games. Like, his reaction, his system is really a lot of free-flowing offense, prioritizes players making quick reads, playing randomly. Like, there's not a lot of set stuff. The players are allowed to just kind of do what they do best. And I think this is a coach that is an outside the box thinker as well. Like, during the NCAA tournament, we saw situations where he had his players missing shots on purpose so that Ade Mara can clean up offensive rebounds and go up for easy putbacks. Like, this is just somebody that really thinks a couple steps ahead. And the thought of him working with Cooper Flagg is very, very exciting. Flagg looked like the best rookie in basketball last year. I was a little upset about him winning Rookie of the Year, over Colin Knipl just from a production standpoint. But I noted multiple times on this podcast that Cooper Flagg was the best player in that class and was going to be the best player in the class. I still believe that today, even after Dylan Harper went on to have a great playoff run with San Antonio. I think that Flagg is going to be a top five player in the NBA, and I don't think it's going to take very long. Well, pairing him with May, it's a dream for Flagg. I feel like May is going to get the absolute best out of him. There's going to be a lot of ball screen actions where Flagg is going to be operating as the primary ball handler. We saw Jason Kidd put Flagg in those situations a lot last year as well. But I think that you're going to see a lot of PNRs and just a lot of Flagg handling the ball. But the actions that this team is going to run off of Flagg should make a lot more sense. And then defensively, this is where I think that May really kind of cut, like, you know, proved himself at Michigan. I was going to say cut his teeth, but Iggy really proved himself to be one of the best coaches in the nation because, like I said, I think he went into Michigan with an offensive kind of reputation, but Michigan ended up being the number one team in the NCAA. When looking at KenPom's defensive efficiency rankings last year, they were impenetrable at times. And in the NCAA tournament, we saw that with them absolutely suffocating opponents on several different occasions. So I feel like this is going to be something that absolutely works. It might take some time, but that just comes down to Dallas needing some time. Like, this Mavericks team is probably a little bit closer to retooling than rebuilding. They have a sensational, you know, young player in Cooper Flagg, and having that speeds up your timeline a little bit. But they also have Kyrie Irving, and they could make the decision to keep Irving and hope that they're competitive right away in year one under May, or they can move Irving and see what draft assets they can get back. I think there are a lot of teams that would be interested in acquiring Kyrie. One of the teams that we've heard several times is Minnesota. But I think that either way, this Mavericks team is now set up really nicely for the future. And I think that May is going to come in and be just a tremendous help to all of the young talent on the roster. I do kind of wonder what it's going to look like in terms of the NBA draft, because, look, we're going to talk about the draft a lot on this show. I'm going to be doing a draft special Tuesday night, an hour before the draft, on our VSIN programming. So I'll be talking about the draft a lot more, and I don't want to go too crazy with it outside of talking about it with our guests. But I do kind of wonder what May's presence means for the number nine pick, where, like I said, you have three Michigan players in that lottery, all up for discussion at number nine with Dallas, whether that is Jaxel Lendeborg, Morris Johnson, or Adeyemi Mara. I wonder if he loved any of them enough to, you know, really go to the front office and say, I want that guy on my roster as I try to build this team moving forward. It could be any of them. Like, all three of them fit really nicely. I would probably pass on Mara because of the presence of Derek Lively, but I do kind of wonder if this shapes what we see in the draft. But still, major, major news. Like, we've been waiting a while to see what happens with this Dallas opening, and I think it took some time for us to really even start thinking about this again. I actually was ready to kind of forget about it and just say, all right, we'll figure out who the Mavericks coach is going to be at some point in the future. But I think that, you know, it makes sense they wanted his opinion before this draft. Like I said, so many Michigan players. Why not pick his brain, see if he views any of the three as, you know, future stars or anything like that? But Dallas, you know, under Masai Ujiri, really heading in the right direction. I can't even begin to tell you, like, how much better this looks today than after the Luka Doncic trade. Like, a pretty good argument can be made that if you're not a Luka Doncic, you know, believer, or you don't love him as a future, you know, number one on a championship team, that they might be in better shape today just because they got Flagg, they got Masai, now they have Dusty. This team has a franchise player, a really good young head coach, and one of the best decision makers in all of basketball calling the shots. So did want to start with that for today. It's breaking news. It might not have a lot, you know, in terms of betting impact for next season. I don't think we're going to be looking at Dallas as a contender in the Western Conference. I don't really think we're going to be looking at that team. I mean, maybe we'll take them to win the, you know, go over on their win total. It depends what they end up doing in the offseason. If there's one place that maybe you want to be bold with it, it's like maybe Flagg makes a leap into the MVP conversation a little bit sooner than we might think. We are going to talk about MVP a little bit later in the show, but it does still feel like it is very, very early for that. So I would say right now, no betting impact, but this is the off season. We're going to be doing some non-betting stuff in the off season because look, there's only so much betting we could talk about with some lines not even released, but this is big news in the NBA. It's not groundbreaking. It's not NBA shaking news, but it's a big, big hire. And it also is really big for college basketball because now Michigan, who is looking to defend as national champions, needs to go out and replace one of the best coaches in the nation. So curious to see what they do there. But that team had reloaded for the next season through the transfer portal in bringing back some key players from last season. But now they're without Dusty. So probably more of a betting impact for college basketball than the NBA. While everyone else is waiting for the season to start, the sharps are already getting to work. VSiN Pro gives you the advanced analytics, player prop projections, and expert insights that serious bettors rely on. And right now is the perfect time to get ahead before the season tips off. Try it for only $9.99 for your first month. Head to vsin.com/subscribe and check out all of your subscription options. The $9.99 offer is great. We have a longer term offer. We have our NFL betting guide out right now for subscribers. So instant value right away if you join us over at VSiN, but make sure you head over to vsin.com where we have a ton of articles all the time. I'm writing a lot of them, but also make sure you check out our VSiN network, which is part of the Sports Plus package on YouTube TV. Or if you are a subscriber, head over to vsin.com to watch all of our live programming or look at the VSiN Watch app. Welcome back to Hardwood Handicappers. I'm excited to be joined by this next guest, Matt McCall, who I mentioned before. You can hear him break down the NBA draft Tuesday night as he recaps the first round and takes your calls. Don't miss a moment on SiriusXM NBA Radio Channel 86. Matt, you've been doing a lot of work previewing the draft with Tom Crean and Amin El-Hassan on SiriusXM Radio. So I'm wondering if I could pick your brain a little bit. First things first, how you doing?
Doing great, man. It's one of the more anticipated NBA drafts, in my opinion. A lot of storylines, a lot of drama. And obviously, we just had a huge news drop that will also impact this draft that I'm sure we'll get into as well. So doing great, but I'm looking forward to tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, no question.
Yeah, well, why don't we start there? Because, you know, I did just talk about Dusty May a little bit. What do you think that this means for what Dallas potentially does at 9? I mean, I don't know for sure that, you know, Masai Ujiri is going to listen to who he wants him to take. I know that they have Mike Schmitz in that front office now. They have a lot of kind of voices in that front office at the moment. But if you think one of these Michigan players fits with Dallas the best, who is it and why?
Well, I think obviously Adai Mara and the job that, that Coach May did with him this year, really a role player out there at UCLA. But to see him evolve as such an offensive threat, the best passing front court player in the country, you can run and initiate offense through him. I think, you know, he would be great alongside Cooper Flagg and, you know, an inside outside threat. Has to get better shooting the basketball from behind the perimeter. But, you know, if that's the direction that they decide to go in and he's available at 9, you know, the connection to Dusty may help. But I think it's a great hire for one. Let me start there. When you look at these college coaches that don't have these inflated egos about themselves, that's how it translates to the NBA. I think that's one of the reasons that you've seen certain college coaches try to make the jump where it fails is because they have huge egos. One of the reasons that I think it worked for Coach Donovan, especially early with the Thunder, was he walked through the door and said, "How can I help?" You can't go up to the level of the NBA where guys are making hundreds of millions of dollars and have been there way longer than you have and act like you've got the whole thing figured out. Dusty's got no ego. He's a great hire. You know, we keep saying that these college coaches, these young college coaches that have had tremendous amounts of success, Dusty May, John Shire, Todd Golden, somebody's going to do it. In fact, maybe all of them ended up doing it at some point in time, but to see Dusty be the first one to take a jump, I'm not surprised. I think it's a fantastic hire. We'll see if they draft one of his guys from Michigan. I think that culturally, sometimes maybe that would be difficult in that locker room. They're still trying to rebuild. There's no question about that. The year that Cooper had was phenomenal. It's a great first stepping stone for him in his NBA career. So we'll see what they do at 9. Who knows what's happening with Kyrie? Where is he at? Where is he going to be at out there on the floor as well? you know, what are they going to do with him? Is he coming back next year? If that's the case, then they don't need a point guard. A front court player adding depth for them like Mara would be a terrific pick. But we'll see. Like I said, that may put Coach May in a difficult situation day one in that locker room, bringing one of his guys with him.
Yeah, and I do wonder what any of it means with the health of Derek Lively. If that foot's feeling a little bit better, that is a player that looked so good early in his career, but has dealt with so many injuries. So maybe they do see a need at the center position because of that. But yeah, I really do like the hire as well. It looked like they were trying to get, you know, John Shire as well out of Duke, and he just didn't want to turn his back on Coach K and the Brotherhood just yet. But I do think you're right in that we're going to see a lot of other young coaches take this leap. I think the other one that we've kind of heard a little bit of rumblings is maybe Todd Golden being the Steve Kerr replacement in Golden State.
Well, I think the other thing too for Coach Golden and for Coach May, it's a little different. Not that they're not getting some of the best players in the country, but Duke from a recruiting standpoint is humming, and they're not having to attack the transfer portal nearly like some of these other schools, because they are getting the best high school players in the country. They did it again this offseason. The last two Naismith players of the year have been Boozer and Cooper Flagg, who were both freshmen, and they both elected to go to Duke. So I think from a recruiting standpoint, sometimes when you have to deal with that portal and it's nonstop, and I walked out of the arena at the Final Four with Mike Boynton, the associate head coach for Michigan, who was getting ready to go do a Zoom with Dusty May and a recruit seconds after they won the national championship. That's just a frustration level that, look, the right opportunity is aligned with the ownership and the management. If Coach May felt like that, obviously he did. Coach Shire, you know, wanting to stay at Duke, not surprised by that at all because of, you know, how well they are doing in recruiting, but love the hire. And we'll see what they do with that ninth pick overall. And he'll go in there and impact Cooper Flagg's career in a very positive way, much like he's just did Adai Mara, much like he just did Morris Johnson Jr. No knock on their previous stops. They were not having the production level. Elliot Cadeau is another one. He was not having the production level that he had this year at Michigan at his previous school. It shows that development matters, and Dusty May is going to go through the door and help Cooper Flagg get to where he wants to get to.
Absolutely. And as with any good NBA draft show, we're going to go from talking about number 9 to now talking about number 1 through 4. But I do just kind of want to get your thoughts on this, because look, there's definitely a chalkier option out there where it goes DeBonsa, Peterson, Boozer, Wilson. But I wanted to ask you, as someone that's been covering for, you know, for a couple of weeks now, where do you see it going in the top 4?
Yeah, there's a lot of headlines, let's just say, with those top 4 picks, and anxious to see how it all plays out. Peterson only, you know, electing to work out for the Washington Wizards, not electing to work out for anybody else. Is this just falling in line for A.J. DeBonsa to stay out there in Utah, which is where he's been for part of his high school career? It's obviously where he played his college year. Is this just all lining up? You know, Peterson coming out. Let's go back to last season. There was so much talk and rumors and negativity around his 1 year at Kansas with how much time he missed, even the game that he pulled himself out of because he was sick. There was a lot of things there and a lot of smoke there. And then all of a sudden he elects to only work out for one school. That continues the negativity, or one franchise, excuse me, that continues the negativity continues. I was a little bit shocked by that, but maybe they know something that we don't know. And the Wizards are going to take him one, which means DeBonsa would go 2, and Boozer or Caleb Wilson would go 3 and then 4. For me, I have been saying this on Channel 84. I've said it on the draft coverage on Channel 86, NBA Radio. Out of all those guys, I think Cam Boozer ends up being Rookie of the Year. And I really believe that, because he's going to go in somewhere and he's going to impact winning. You know, Colin Knipple, Cooper Flagg, those guys going in and impacting winning right away, seeing the effect that they had day one in their franchises. I have been advocating for him. Everyone wants to talk about lack of athleticism. Look, he played against that Michigan front line on a neutral site in Washington, D.C. in February. He averaged a double-double all season long. He's unselfish. He plays the game the right way. There's been no question marks about his character, about anything that's going on. Obviously, his parents did an outstanding job of raising him. His dad, long tenured NBA career. So I think when you talk about rookies of the year, he's my pick. I would take him number 1. with Washington. I think Devonta has the most upside. I would also put Caleb Wilson. I have so many question marks still on Peterson. But for me, the guy that's going to go through the door to impact winning day one right away is going to be Cam Boozer.
Yeah, I'm absolutely right there with you. If people have been listening to this podcast long enough, my draft board does have Cam Boozer at the top. You said it, like, just the production from day one was out of this world. Number one in all college basketball and box plus minus this year as, you know, a teenager. Just really, really impressive. And I think that his perimeter skills are a little underrated. When people kind of talk about him, you hear about him and being like a brute force guy around the basket. But he shot the three ball really well. I think he's a little bit more nimble on his feet than people think, at least with the way that he processes the game. It allows him to kind of get a step on defenders. So I think that he is the guy that I would probably be betting to win Rookie of the Year, depending on where he lands, if he lands in a good situation. But I think he has the best career of the three as well.
Well, the other thing too, Zach, and you hear me say the term unselfish. Go back to that game that they played on the road against Michigan State early in the season. The ball is in his hands. He drives down the lane with the game on the line, plays off 2 feet, and kicks it out to his teammate for a wide-open three. How many young superstars would have forced something up at the basket in that type of situation and not made the right basketball play? He made the right basketball play, which to me shows you how he can impact winning in so many different ways. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and I do think that his processing is just such, you know, a big factor for him. I feel like bigs that can pass are just so good in today's NBA. So I feel like that's something else that's being slept on a little bit when people talk about him. I understand the upside for Devonta. I have Devonta above Peterson as well. But I think that Boozer gives you a really good mix of extremely high floor, but also superstar upside.
Yeah, extremely high floor, superstar upside, and when you're getting, and me and Coach Crean talk about this all the time, when you're getting picked by one of these franchises that is in a rebuild or culturally they're still not where, and coaches throw that term out all the time, right? Culture, 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 but that's real. And for someone to get drafted into a situation where it is a rebuild, you got to be a self-starter.
After this, we're going to be talking about who the Clippers will be picking, and then we're going to run through some over-unders on draft positions for certain players, and I'll get Matt's sleepers and busts for the 2026 NBA draft. Before kind of moving gears a little bit and getting away from the top of the draft, where do you think the Clippers go at five? Because I think a lot of people believe that's kind of where the draft starts. We all kind of know that there's a top four in this draft. LA at number five has been linked to a lot of different players. Who do you think that they'll actually draft? And if you were them, who would you draft?
Well, obviously, if we take those top four guys, you know, out of it, and you know, when you talk about Devonta, Peterson, Boozer, and I would also put Caleb Wilson in that mix. I mean, to me, he's a guy that doesn't get talked about enough because of the injury that he went through. But you want to talk about a guy that will be self-motivated. His upside is through the roof. I think the next pick is interesting. And in fact, I have this guy. I would take him above Peterson. People may think that I'm nuts with regards to saying this, but you heard me just use the term upside. There may be a guy in Keaton Wagler that has more upside than anybody in this draft. And you look at what he did in that Purdue game. You look at what he did in the Iowa game to get his team to the Final Four. I keep saying this too. I don't think he's used a razor ever in his life. I don't think that's how young he looks, you know, in his face. To me, there's upside. You can put him in middle ball screens. He'll make the right play. Elite level shot maker. He reminds me so much of Shea Gorgeous-Alexander. I'm not saying he's there yet, but the guy that you guys traded away, that's an MVP in the league. You got a chance and an opportunity to get someone very similar who's also very young when you take him. I like Wagler. Some people think Acuff should go there. I think he's terrific as well. Huge fan of his. Sat down with him at the Naismith Awards. Asked him, you know, what he felt like he had to work on. He said, I got to get better defensively. How many superstars say that going into the NBA draft? I got to get better defensively. He knows it. He's aware of it. So I like him there too. But for me, I'm looking at what happened when they traded away Shea, and this guy is very comparable to him. You got a chance and opportunity to get it right if you take Wagler.
I think Wagler is the one that fits best with Darius Garland. I know that a team like LA maybe doesn't want to think about that too much, but you know, 26 years old for Garland, he is a part of your future. He is a smaller guard. I think pairing him with another smaller guard could be troubling, especially if you do have Kawhi Leonard on the roster for day one, which I think they will. I think that Wagner is somebody that can play with Garland as opposed to Acuff, where it would become a little bit more awkward.
Yeah, and again, you heard me say the term, you know, the locker room, the locker room, the locker room. If you're bringing in another point guard and you could sell Garland all you want on, hey, yeah, we're going to play you guys together. It's just great. He's looking at you saying, what's the future hold for me within this franchise? If you're bringing in another point guard with your fifth pick that's very similar to me and my game, you guys are moving on from me. And now you're getting off on the wrong foot in terms of going into next season. So I love the pick by Wagner. In fact, regardless of need and what, I just think he's his best basketball, not that Acuffs is not, is in front of him because he is so young. He's got so much room to grow.
Absolutely. Well, with this being VSiN, the sports betting network, I do want to pick your brain on some bettable things for the NBA draft. These are going to be over-under draft positions from Caesars Sportsbooks, where I was able to get them. I'm going to throw out a player. I'm going to throw out a number. You tell me over or under where you think they're going to be drafted. Over meaning they'll go later than that number. Under meaning they'll go earlier. Let's start with Acuff, who is listed at 6.5, which I think is kind of right on the money. Do you think he goes before or after 6.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's not going below 6. You can't take him below 6. So give me the under on that. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the Clippers do take him at 5, but he's not. If he's available at 6, you're taking him at 6.
Yeah, and I think the fit with Brooklyn is really, really interesting. I know that they've been kind of linked to Nate Aymond and maybe some of the other guards in this draft, and I think the Sacramento's maybe hot for Acuff, but I absolutely love the idea of Acuff playing for now the smaller brand in New York, but playing in New York and maybe giving that team an identity and a face of the franchise.
Zach, I wouldn't be shocked. I said this the other day. I gave out my top 5 picks. If that 4th pick is Chicago Bulls, do they keep Wagner home? He's right there. He's in Illinois. I wouldn't be shocked if that happens. I am anxious to see that 4th pick.
Yeah, I actually, a couple of days ago on this podcast, gave out Acuff to go in that spot at like 25-1. I feel like it's probably unlikely, but I wouldn't say it's a certainty that they draft Caleb Wilson, even though I think that a lot of people are kind of writing that in Sharpie at number 4.
I'm with you. It'd be interesting to see who can come in and be a franchise type player for new management, you know, new coach, new staff. I'm anxious to see what they do.
All right. Well, let's move to a Damara, because I think this is one of my favorite players in this draft. 9.5 is the number. I think that that's, you know, seemingly pretty high given what we've seen from him on the floor and now off the floor. I've seen some videos of him really shooting a nice ball from 3 in workout settings. Do you think he goes 9 or earlier or 10 or later?
I'm such a Mara fan, and we're sitting there and we're looking. We've talked about that with their new coach. Do they decide and elect to do that? But 7, 8, Sacramento, Atlanta. I'm going to go the under.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the under. I'm saying he goes in the top 10. The run that they went on to the national championship, his workouts, his combine, his ability to impact the game defensively. You know, I felt like if he's going to be there for the Thunder to take at 12, they have to snatch him up to give someone that can impact the game defensively, maybe be a little more physical. We'll see if they decide to take Moriz Johnson Jr. So it kind of frees Chet up to have to guard bigger, stronger fives in this league like they had to against Wimby. Interesting to see, do they take, you know, Moriz Johnson Jr. with that pick? So, but with the die, give him to me in the top 10. I'm taking the under.
I agree with you. I think that 8 to Atlanta is the spot we're going to see. I wonder if that team maybe has some buyer's remorse on Zachary Risacher and feels they maybe should have gone with like a Donovan Clingan. This gives you a chance to kind of right that wrong. I feel like it's a very similar player, one that very good shot blocker, good touch, you know, solid reader of the game, decent passer. I feel like he could do a lot of the things at the center position that that team is looking for. So interested in seeing if that's where they go. But 2 more for you. Jaxel Lendeborg, 13.5, and then LeBaron Filon, 17.5.
Filon, give me the under. I don't think that we're talking nearly enough about him. I really don't. I mean, this is a superstar. You know, you talk about these guards. Everyone wants to talk about Acuff, Mikael Brown Jr. They want to talk about Wagler. I mean, this guy needs to be talked about in the same category of those guys. Give me the under on him. And what did you say the line was on Yaxel?
13.5.
I mean, I hate to be consistent, but I mean, at one point he was going to be the first non-freshman taken in this NBA draft. That's what a lot of people felt like, maybe somewhere around like the 9, 10, 11 mark. I think Adai, his teammate, may have jumped ahead of him with regards to that. But I'll just keep it consistent with all these picks. Just give me the under. I like them all. I saw this Michigan team play an enormous amount. I saw them in person at the Final Four in the national championship. I also had their Purdue game at Purdue where they went in there and beat those guys on the road. So I'm such a fan of their length, their athleticism. You know, those three front court players, look, you're getting three outstanding front court players, and, you know, whoever ends up taking them, those guys are going in and going to find a way to impact winning in a major, major way.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And Phylon, I think I'm right there with you as well. There's a top tier of guards in this draft. I think when you kind of ask people around the media and just the general consensus, but I think Phylon's right there, and he's just not really being included in that conversation, maybe because he's a year older than some of these guys, but the production was off the charts. So I really think he's going to be a great pro. And then before I let you out of here, just two quick questions. You can go as much detail as you want. Who's your favorite sleeper in this draft and why? And who do you think is the most overhyped player in this draft and why?
I mean, I have to go overhyped just with Peterson. I just, that's just how I feel with everything that's transpired throughout his college season. And I know, you know, the full body cramping with the creatine. I think that's real. I'm not saying that that's not real. But when you watch him pull himself out of a game because, you know, wasn't feeling well or a sickness, January, February, everybody's sick. On a college basketball team, everybody's got the flu, everybody's got a cold, nobody's feeling well. You're sharing playing, sharing locker room, sharing huddles, everybody's sick. I just have a lot of question marks, and I hope that he proves me wrong. I've heard his character, he works, he's a high character player. We had Norm Roberts, who recruited him, on Channel 86 NBA Radio the other day. So, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but I just think that there's some question marks still. To me, most underrated guy, Zubi Ejiofor, Big East Player of the Year. You just heard me, you know, talk about Adai Mara and his ability to pass and set up his teammates and find guys. Zubi's right there with him. I mean, they're running offense through him. I mean, on the fast break, running offense through Zubi Ejiofor. Late first round, early second round, I don't care. That guy will be on an NBA roster next season and be playing in NBA games. The Big East Player of the Year. Give me Zubi Ejiofor.
I love Zubi as well. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun to have you on, and we'll get you out of here now. But like I said before, listen to Matt break down the NBA draft tomorrow night. After the NBA draft is over, head over to SiriusXM NBA Radio, Channel 86. You'll get all of his takes. You'll be able to make some calls. It should be a lot of fun. Attention any listeners who are new to VSiN, signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right. Well, at the beginning of the show, I said I wanted to talk about some odds for the 2026-2027 season. And what I want to talk about is actually the MVP award. We've already talked a little bit on the Hardwood Handicappers podcast about championship odds for next season, some teams I like based on looking at those championship odds in terms of maybe we'll go over their win total if it's in the range that we think it's going to be in, or maybe we'll take that team to make the postseason if we can get a good price. We've discussed all of that, but DraftKings Sportsbook does currently have MVP odds up right now. And I find this to be a really interesting conversation because Victor Wembanyama is viewed as the clear front runner to win this award. I think everybody believes that if Wemby is able to stay healthy, he's going to win a ton of these throughout his career. And I think that people believe that starts with next season. I mean, Wemby right now is the betting favorite over a DK plus 200 to win the award. And based off last season alone, it's completely understandable why you would think he's going to win. 25 points per game, 11.5 rebounds per game, 3.1 assists, 3.1 blocks, played 64 games. And if you're looking at some of the advanced numbers, number two in the NBA in estimated plus minus at plus 8.7, and number three in the NBA in estimated wins added at 15.2. He was sensational for San Antonio. He helped the Spurs get to the NBA Finals and really put up a good fight against the Knicks. They probably feel like they should have won that series and, you know, took home a ring. But Wemby kind of made his turn towards being the face of the league. And I think a lot of people were saying after the OKC series that he was indeed the first, you know, the face of the NBA. I'm not sure I agree yet, especially after the way the New York series went, because he kind of turned himself into a bit of a villain with some of his antics in that series. But either way, he enters next season as the favorite. So my question is, can anybody challenge him? Or is this just going to be his award if he ends up playing the minimum game requirement, which is 65 games? And I actually think that there is some value in going away from Wemby. Like, I don't really want to lay, I don't really want to take plus 200 odds on somebody with his injury history right off the bat. Like, that's where I'd start with. I feel like there's not a lot of value there with someone that we know has gotten injured a lot, has dealt with some, you know, illnesses or whatever you want to call the blood clot. It hasn't been, you know, the easiest kind of run for him in the NBA early in his career in terms of just health. So we'll start there. But also, like, I don't think a lot of voters go into a season looking to take a chalkier option and vote for a chalkier option. So I think that that's going against Wemby a little bit as well. And that's also, by the way, why I would just cross out Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, SGA is number two on the board. He'll put up another case to be the number, you know, the MVP again in a third straight season. But I do think that after a disappointing playoff run and just with him having won two in a row, the voter fatigue is going to be through the roof for SGA. I just don't see him even really being a real part of this conversation. Like, I think that statistically he'll be there with some of the other MVP candidates, but I don't think he's a real part of this. So I would just say that I feel like the voters will be looking at getting some other guys involved. And I kind of think it starts with Luka Doncic, who I think he had a sensational year for Los Angeles last season. I mean, he was unable to stay healthy. That has been something that has been a thorn in his side as well, just like it has been for Wembanyama. Like, Luka is going to need to continue to do work on his body, which he did last offseason and did a really good job. But getting to 65 games is going to be the challenge for Luka. But last year, number four in the NBA in offensive estimated plus minus at plus 6.4. Number four in estimated wins added at 15.1, which is 0.1 off of Wemby. So kind of right there with him. And you just kind of look at some of the traditional numbers with Luka. They're insane. I mean, 33.5 points per game, 8.3 assists per game, 7.7 rebounds per game. He made a late push towards winning this award last season. And I just kind of think he builds on that momentum to start the season for Los Angeles, because the Lakers team that we saw towards the end of the year, they were winning games at a really impressive clip. So I think you're looking at a Lakers team that can easily win in the ballpark of 55 games next season. And I think it's another turn towards Luka being, you know, the face of this franchise, which he kind of already is. LeBron James is there, might be there again. But I think that last year was really the push towards this being Luka Doncic's basketball team. And I think it's going to be like that for the remainder of his career. So I think Luka's now the face of the Lakers, putting up massive numbers, looking to win MVP for the first time in his career, regular season MVP. And I just feel like that's something that a player of his caliber, like historically, when they're putting up the numbers that he's putting up in their primes, you tend to see these players make history. It's a little bit before the Wemby reign of terror. Maybe you believe that begins next season. I still think Wemby is going to be a little bit better in two or three years when he is a little bit more filled out, has some more post moves, has some more go-to moves as an individual scorer. I think that right now is the time to kind of strike if you're a player like Luka and you need to win one. This is your chance. So Luka is plus 650 right now. I feel like we're going to be looking at that number like it's a pretty good one, maybe as soon as like December or January of next season. I feel like he was just playing so well before he got injured last year that he just keeps that up with a better supporting cast around him. And we're going to be talking about him like he's the best player in the NBA again. So that's the first player that kind of came to mind The other one that really jumped out to me was Giannis Antetokounmpo at 14-1. And look, it's going to be a new situation for him. I understand that. But I do feel like there's this kind of perception that Giannis has slipped in the pecking order of the NBA. But he averaged 27.6 points per game last year, 9.8 rebounds, 5.4 assists. The MVP numbers are still there. And even when you look at advanced numbers, number four in the league in estimated plus minus last year at plus 7.4. So he has still been statistically, like whether you're looking at traditional numbers or advanced numbers, a top five player in the league. And I just kind of wonder if you bring the motivation back to him, you're no longer playing for a Milwaukee team that has no hopes of going on and winning anything in the postseason or really doing any damage in the long term, you probably get back a good portion of what made Giannis a special defensive player. So that's really what I'm expecting to see out of him with his new team. I think you're going to get a locked in Giannis on both ends of the floor. And even if he has to share kind of ball handling responsibilities, his offensive role in terms of usage rate comes down a little bit. I think whatever you lose with that, you're going to pick up an efficiency as a scorer. So I think that Giannis is somebody that you're seeing out there at 14-1 right now. Man, that is a long number for a player that I still believe is top five in the league when he is healthy. So those are the two that really jumped out to me. I did try to look a little bit further down the board and see if anybody really stood out as like maybe an early breakout comes. Not sure I really see that. I mean, I talked a little bit before with Dusty May. Maybe the Cooper Flagg breakout happens a little bit earlier than expected. He's down at 170-1 at DraftKings. That is something that I think is a little bit too far-fetched. Maybe it's Cade Cunningham, who, you know, performed like an all-NBA player for Detroit last season. I expect him to have a better team around him, and Detroit can very easily get back to winning 55-60 games. So I think the Pistons are going to be good enough in terms of win-loss record for Cade to be in the conversation. I think the numbers will be there with Cade. It's really about Cade kind of shifting the narrative around him as a player and showing the world that he can be on that actual level with the very, very best in the NBA. I think we view him as more of a tier two or tier three guy, but I think Cade is probably the one most likely to get into that conversation when you're looking at the players that aren't in the conversation at all. Maybe outside of that, you're looking at some players that have been around for a while, like Jalen Brunson. Does he just go nuclear during the regular season and lead the Knicks to 55-60 wins and do more as an individual performer on a night-by-night basis and kind of win, you know, people over and voters over with kind of this newfound stardom that he's had? I know he's been a star, but superstar. I think that that's maybe the player that can do it. But it is going to be really interesting to see what happens with this award. I did want to talk about it, though, because we've talked a lot about team success. I want to talk a little bit about player success for the 2026-2027 season. But I hope you enjoyed all of that. If you did, please throw us a subscription on YouTube, Hardwood Handicappers, one word. We're trying to grow that YouTube page. Otherwise, like on Spotify, like on Apple Music, whatever you can do in terms of positive feedback. We'd appreciate hearing from you. And we hope to have you again for a Tuesday special edition of Hardwood Handicappers, where we're going live and doing the NBA draft, you know, pre-show over on VSiN Network. So make sure you join me for that if you've been a fan of this show.